Chapter 70, Merin 15. In the dusk light, the ships of Merin's convoy were dark blots upon the blue seas. He leaned against the gunwale of his flagship, wind ruffling his cloak as he looked southward. To his eyes, the air current above was little different from the water below. His flagship left two wakes behind it, one in the air, one in the water. His arm still ached. Though he could find no visible marks, his hand had gone numb in the hours following his duels. He had begun to fear that it would remain that way, but a sharp prickling had awoken him that night, the first night at sea. Slowly, like a limb reawaking after being slept upon in the wrong position, sensation returned to his hand. Except rather than just the normal tingling, this reawakening had brought with it sharp pains. He hadn't been able to sleep that night. Fortunately, the pain had dulled. Only the ring of flesh around his wrist, the place where the bracelet had sat, continued to burn with any real pain. The rest of his arm just ached dully, like muscles overworked by spear training. Despite the pain, he had only lasted 2 days without the bracelet. It glistened on his wrist at that moment, gifting him with its strange powers. The winds ahead whispered to him as they parted for his ship, and he was tempted to do more than just watch. He wanted to feel as he had during that duel, feel the wind cradling him, driving his swings and boosting his movements. The longing was odd since it was accompanied by an acute memory of the flaring pain. How could he both crave the sensation and fear its agony at the same time? He resisted the impulse to call the wind to him. Not only did he worry about the pain and the damage it might do to his arm, but there was something more. He hadn't noticed it the first time he'd used the wind, but his second combat had done something to the bracelet. When he had taken it out after the 2-day hiatus, he had found the jade on the inside powdery and flaking. A good half of it had brushed away at his probing. Whatever he had done when he called the winds, it hadn't just hurt him, it had burned away the jade as well, just as it had when he had destroyed the glyph ward back on the night of the dueling competition. Merin had been forced to have one of the Lochinron armorers rework the bracelet to fit the newly thinned stones so that they would still touch his skin when worn. The winds rustled behind him.
"My lord," a voice asked.
"Yes?" Merin asked, turning to find Calden standing respectfully, his new shard blade, still unbonded of course, resting on his shoulder. Since swearing his oath to Merin, the soldier had taken it upon himself to be a liaison between Merin and the Lochinron royalty.
"The new scout reports have arrived, my lord," Calden said. "His Majesty has requested your presence at the debriefing."
Merin nodded, trying to ignore the worshipful glint in Calden's eyes. Merin had incorrectly assumed that the impression would fade as time progressed. The young soldier still regarded Merin with the same mixture of reverence and respect he had displayed on that first day.
"You shouldn't blame the man," Merin thought. "You probably spent your first weeks as a shard-bearer in a similar daze."
The soldier's respect was discomforting nonetheless.
"When?" Merin asked.
"Shortly, my lord," Calden said. "After the king finishes his meal."
Merin nodded, and Calden took the gesture as a dismissal, though Merin would have preferred that the man stay. Merin felt almost as alone as he had during his days of captivity. Renarin stayed locked in his quarters most of the time, Shinri always made Merin feel guilty with those looks of hers, and the Lochinrons universally regarded him as some kind of divine hero. Since his failure to save Arador, and subsequent discussions with Renarin, had convinced Merin of just how unheroic he was, the people's general regard made him feel deceitful somehow. Merin sighed. This night's report would be like the others. He would sit quietly, not saying anything, as the captain of the fast-moving scout ships relayed what his men had discovered from talking to villagers along the coast. Merin's silence had a simple and practical motivation. He had nothing to add.
What he knew of war came from a spearman's viewpoint and was of little use to macroscopic plannings. He had no experience with scouting, foraging, or planning assaults. Yet the other men in the conference, King Tamar, along with the other two former regents as his partisans, and the collected Lochanron admirals and generals, always mistook Meryn's silence for thoughtfulness. When he did say something, they all nodded appreciatively, as if his single sentence contained truths beyond what normal men could comprehend. They always consulted him on decisions regarding the fleet, and even went so far as to ask his permission for minor course changes. Meryn sighed, turning to stroll down the left side of the ship. Port? Starboard? He thought that left meant port, but if he was wrong, no one had the courage to correct him. He walked undirectedly. The others always sent Calden's warning a good amount of time before the actual meeting began, so that Meryn would have time to prepare. Meryn probably had about an hour before he had to climb aboard one of the ferrying boats to be taken to the king's vessel. He found himself wandering toward the cabin area, past the rowing men and up the steps to the central tier. He didn't go to his room, however, but paused in front of the one beside it, Renarin's chamber. He knocked. As usual, there was no answer. This time, however, Meryn wasn't in a mood to be dissuaded. He had to talk to someone who didn't look at him as some kind of heraldic savior. So he just opened the door. Renarin sat in a chair in front of the door, staring directly at him. Meryn jumped slightly. It soon became obvious, however, that Renarin wasn't looking at Meryn, but beyond him, his eyes thoughtful.
"Come in and close the door,"
Renarin said quietly. Meryn entered the room, doing as instructed. The boat's frame creaked weightily as it rocked, but Meryn felt as if he had entered another world, one of strange foreign markings. He had expected to see numbers on the walls. Renarin had been spending a lot of time in the room, after all. But seeing them still left Meryn with an eerie feeling. Renarin had carved his numbers directly into the wooden walls and floor, etching each one with a careful and precise hand. Thousands upon thousands of glyphs defaced the room, which Renarin had emptied of all furniture save for the single chair and some wrinkled bedding in the corner. The numbers were tiny this time, even smaller than the ones Renarin had drawn in his cell. And there were far more of them. There seemed to be a logic to them, one that Meryn couldn't quite apprehend. Some of the numbers moved in broad formations like marching armies, and others looked like they would form murals if one stood far enough away. All four walls were coated with scribbles, as was the entire floor. Only one section of the room was still clean. A circular place directly in the center of the door Meryn had entered through.
"What do you see?" Meryn asked, stepping over to stand beside his friend's chair.
"Questions," Renarin said. "Problems. Wars. We live in strange times, Meryn."
Wind seeped through cracks in the door.
"I know," Meryn said truthfully. "I did as I wanted," Renarin said. "I looked at the larger tapestry. I looked at movements, not individuals. And I found myself horribly unprepared to do so. I don't have the answers I want, Meryn. I can almost see so many things, but the answers..."
"I don't understand," Meryn said. "What do you see, Renarin? When I touch jade, the wind becomes real to me. It's like that for you?"
"Kind of," Renarin said, still staring at the wall. "But not so clear. It mostly feels like I am given only a shadowed glimpse of the truths I want, a seductive taste. There is so much more that I can't see, but I fear to touch it."
Meryn shook his head.
"Fear? Why?" "Because it's so vast," Renarin said. "When I hold onyx, I feel like there's an immensity pressing against me, a force of incredible power, or of incredible information. The two feel very similar to me now."
"A force?" Meryn asked.
"Like the Almighty?" "Maybe," Renarin said. You see the winds when you hold that jade, but there is something more you can do, isn't there? You have a power beyond simply seeing, a power to affect and change.
Yes, Marin said with surprise. How did you know?
The histories speak of it, Renarin said.
When you change and direct the wind rather than just see it, you expend the jade somehow, don't you? Windrunners from the histories always needed a steady stream of jade to fuel their powers.
Marin glanced at his wrist, then nodded in acknowledgement, though he wasn't certain if Renarin saw the gesture or not.
I think there's something more I can do, too, Renarin said in a quiet, haunted voice. A way to change, a way to find answers, a power greater than I see now, a way to do more than just guess at patterns, a way to see pure truth. When I hold my onyx, I can sense it, sense something calling to me, a luring call to seek the knowledge that waits just out of view.
Renarin paused, looking up at Marin for the first time. His eyes were chilling.
I fear to do it, Marin, he whispered. I fear what would happen to me if I seek those answers. In the histories, the seers never needed more onyx. They never expended it. I don't know why.
Marin shivered. He glanced at Renarin's hand, which clutched his familiar shard of onyx, rubbing it with his finger, caressing it.
Don't do it, Marin said impulsively. Whatever it is, Renarin, don't do it. These things we do, they're dangerous. We don't know enough about them.
Renarin nodded.
The Apellian have been lost for too long. I still can't see what caused them to come back. It's too closely related to why they disappeared in the first place.
When I use my ability, Marin said confessionally, something happens to me. When I really use it, not just see with it. It brings me pain, a sharp, burning agony in my skin where I touch the jade.
There must always be a cost, Marin, Renarin said. Nothing is ever achieved without a cost being paid.
And my pain is that cost? Marin asked.
No,
Renarin said with an almost amused tone as he turned back toward the door.
No, the pain isn't the cost, Marin. It's just a side effect of the cost.
Marin shifted uncomfortably. Then what is the cost? Renarin didn't answer. His eyes remained focused on the hole in his patterns.
Renarin?
Marin prodded.
I don't know, Marin,
Renarin said, though Marin couldn't tell if he were speaking about this amorphous cost or about something completely different.
I don't know if I'll be able to resist. There are dangers coming, dangers that will affect everyone, not just us, not just kings and thrones. I saw hints of it when I worked in the cell, but this pattern, it shows me how ignorant I was. Though I tried to make my calculations for the broad scope, every avenue I try focuses me back toward a single event. That is the hole you see there, the one question that defies every permutation.
Marin frowned, glancing toward the door. If he looked with a cocked head, it seemed like the hole in the writing were indeed a focal point of all the other patterns. Strings of numbers ran across walls through massive collections and patterns, only to end abruptly at this one central nothingness.
I can't find the answer, Renarin said. Yet I need it. We need it. Without this, all of the different possibilities end the same.
He stopped, then turned toward Marin and whispered a single question.
How do you kill a man who cannot die?
The room fell still. Marin felt a sudden apprehensiveness strike him, a desire to run and flee, to escape the chill unnaturalness of Renarin's cabin. Renarin turned away from him.
I need to start again, he decided. I can find the answer. I have to. I'll need another room. Will you trade with me?
And come sleep in here with all of these numbers staring at me? I'd sooner swim to Alethkar.
I'll arrange for you to get a new cabin, Marin said carefully.
Renarin nodded distractedly, and Marin fled the room. Suddenly, the discomfort of sitting through another scouting report seemed blessedly tame.